Welcome, amigos. You're listening to The Rob Aguilar Show on Radio Free Brooklyn. Today, joining us, we have Michael J. Russer. He is a prostate cancer survivor. And he tells us how he turned this tragedy of being diagnosed with prostate cancer and turned it into a blessing. We also got really personal about how he overcame erectile dysfunction as a result of having prostate cancer. Now, that personally is a scary thing. I think erectile dysfunction scares me more than prostate cancer. And I really like Michael's outlook on life. Here he is diagnosed with prostate cancer, but the way he speaks, the way he talks about life, you'd think he is the healthiest man alive. And I think sometimes as human beings, we end up taking a lot of things for granted. So I really enjoyed my conversation with Michael. Now, before we get started, I'd like to tell you about our sponsors. We have Roan Jewelry. That's R-O-A-N Jewelry. I want you to check them out. www.roanjewelry.com. They have great gifts this holiday season. And when you make a purchase over on their site, you help support this show. Also, we have affiliate links over at Onnit and at Amazon. And you can find those affiliate links on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Rob Aguilar Show. When you make a purchase on these websites using those links, you help support the show. And we can continue to bring you really interesting interviews week after week. Also, I'd love to hear from you. Shoot me an email at robaguilarshow@gmail.com. If you have comments, if you have suggestions, if there's topics you want us to cover, if you'd like to take a crack at being a co-host, or you have something interesting you want to say, reach out. I'd love to hear from you. So we've got a lot of fun things lined up. Stick around. You do not want to be left out.
From A1 Studios in Sunset Park, Brooklyn, New York, this is The Rob Aguilar Show.
Michael, welcome to the podcast.
Rob, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you and your listeners.
Prostate cancer and surviving that. That is such a story. What you've overcome and what you've accomplished and where you are today is an inspiration for men all around the world who might have the bad news when they go into a routine doctor's appointment and they are told that they might have prostate cancer or have prostate cancer. What was that like when you first received that news?
Oh, boy. It was a surprise and not a pleasant one. In my family, the big C is never a good thing. I lost 5 other members of my immediate family to various forms of cancer. As far as I know, I'm the first one with prostate cancer, but just a couple of weeks ago, I had a genetic counselor look at my family and the extended family, and oh my God, there's so much cancer. So it's never a good thing, and you start wondering, you know, what does this mean? And that was 3 years ago. I'm still here, but I technically still have that cancer, and I actually picked up another one since then. In my family, it's, well, what's the second or third or fourth chew going to be, right?
Well, it's interesting that you say it with such ease, and you're laughing about it, where most people would be devastated. I mean, they would consider that a death sentence.
Well, okay, here's the thing. We all have a death sentence. It's none of us are getting out of this alive. It's just a matter of when and how. And my time might be shorter than most people. I don't know. I'm still surviving that cancer. It's still with me, and it's actually recently reared its ugly head rather aggressively. So I really don't know what my future holds for that. But I've come to pretty much peace with that, Rob. One of the gifts I think anybody who has cancer can appreciate this. One of the gifts, if you want to call it that, of the disease is it, if you allow it, it will bring the notion that life is to be lived every moment to its fullest. And this is not a practice run, This is not something we get to, in a few years, we'll be able to really start living. Something like this tells you, you better start living now. Otherwise, you don't know really how much time you're going to have. So, yeah, it's not that I make light of it. It's that I try not to let it ruin my day. And so that's kind of the attitude I take. And I have to tell you, every time I do a blood test, which is once a month, I dread it because the last time it showed that my cancer, the aggressiveness of my cancer reasserted itself significantly. And I didn't want to see that. I didn't want to see those results. But, that's just part of what comes with that. Yeah. And I kind of put me on my butt for a day. And I got up and I said, all right, that's what it is. And it won't be the first or last time. What's so interesting is that so many people go through life not living, and they don't have cancer at all. And so to me, it's just so ironic that for some of us, it takes a life-threatening disease to realize that. And it's part of my hope and mission is to for that not to be the case for most other people that I can reach out to.
Isn't it extremely sad? You said it perfectly. People who are completely healthy, people who don't have something like cancer, they're not living life.
Yeah.
They're worried about so many other things that maybe they should not be worrying about. And whatever might have happened in their life is holding them back from truly living life. And here you are with prostate cancer. And you said you were diagnosed with another type of cancer. And you're living life. You sound happy. You sound at ease. You sound content. You sound like the guy that most people wish they could be.
Well, thank you. You know, I have a good support system around me. I have wonderful people that love me, and I love them back. And I think a big part of this is getting to the point of acceptance. You know, when you're diagnosed with cancer and then on top of that, which I'm sure we'll get to, is full impotence as the result of my treatments. That's quite, that was more of a shock actually than the cancer.
Wow. That scares me. That scares me more than cancer.
You know how many times I hear that, Rob? I've actually had men tell me, I would rather die than have what you have. And he wasn't talking about the cancer. and here's the thing. If cancer is the gift to living in the moment, then my impotence is by far the biggest gift to my intimacy and that of my partner. And there's going to be a lot of men trying to get their head wrapped around that one.
Yes, that's a very bold statement.
And it's absolutely true. If somebody had told me 3 years ago that I'd be saying stuff like this and actually meaning it, I'd say, yeah, well, whatever drugs you're on, I'd like some because they got to be really good. And here's the thing is that we are the most digitally connected society that the human species has ever, evolved into. But at the same time, we are also probably the most disconnected from a heart standpoint. And everything in our society conspires to keep us distracted, which is a form of disconnect. And whether it's entertainment, whether it's the news, whether it's, the sex, whether it's whatever, the idea here is don't feel anything bad. And that's why I went through most of my life until about 3 years ago. And this happened prior to my diagnosis, ironically. In September of 2011, I just said I had enough. I felt like I was dying inside. I had a very successful career. I had a wonderful family, but I felt totally shut down and disconnected. And I said, that's it. I'm done. And made a huge shift. Well, 2 months after I made that shift, as I what I call my proverbial line in the sand and stepped over, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer. And it's probably a good thing I made that shift before I was diagnosed, because I think I would have taken that diagnosis quite a bit differently if I had been still shut down. Because I think if you're shut down and then you're given this what could be perceived as a sentence, it just like one more thing. Well, you know, my life was crappy before, but now, oh, geez. Yeah. And I don't look at it that way. I have to say my biggest concern with respect to the cancer is the potential for slow degradation. I have a lot of energy. I have a lot yet to offer and a lot of different ways to serve before I go. I saw how most of my family were just, I mean, I saw my dad go from 200 pounds to 100, and I already made the choice that I'm not going to go out that way. You know, however this progresses, I'm not going out that way. And I don't know what that means yet, but I'm hoping I don't have to come to that decision. You know, you start thinking that that gal that had brain cancer, and she knew what was coming. And I personally felt she had every right to make that choice. And because it's not just you, it's the people that, you know, that care about you and that will be burdened by that. And so, you know, I've been giving a lot of thought to that lately, and especially as the cancer has become more aggressive. And that doesn't mean I'm going to succumb to it. It just means, you know, it's become more aggressive. I just don't know what that means yet. But there's so many people that in our culture today that are feeling very disconnected, discontent, and wondering why they feel that way. And I wondered most of my life, and I realized it was just because I kept my heart shut down and I was afraid to feel anything. And it's not a one-way street. We're not built to just feel good things. If you want to feel, truly feel and live life, it means feeling everything. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, I don't want to feel the bad stuff. I don't want to feel, that's uncomfortable. That's, you know, well, One way to handle that is look at it from the standpoint of being an observer. And I liken it to surfing. You know, life's like a series of waves. And, you know, those waves are going to impact you whether you like that fact or not. So you can choose to learn to study those waves and observe them and learn how to use their energy to your best ability so that they at least don't trounce you. And you're bound to get some good rides, but there's going to be some waves that are going to be pretty scary and pretty uncomfortable. But at least become aware of them and then ride them to your best of your ability. And if what you're feeling right now doesn't feel good, that will pass just like a wave. And if what you're feeling right now is just euphoric, that too will pass. And it's just the nature of life, at least the way I've been observing it. So I think the more we can become active observers of what's going on and not take things too personally will help with that whole idea of keeping our heart open, because in my mind, that's part of my real big message, is that's what's required. That's what we've been afraid to do, yet that is what our hearts yearn to do, is really connect with people. And that kind of connection can only come from one open heart to another, not from our digital devices, that's for darn sure.
This outlook that you have now on life and everything that you just mentioned a few moments ago, was that always how you view things, or is this something that happened after the cancer?
No, it happened. No, that's what's so weird about it. Now, I actually struggled with being present. I struggled with really enjoying life. I was very shut down. I was very successful, financially very successful. I was an international speaker, author, in the technology field, highly acclaimed at what I did, but it never really gave me much satisfaction, and I could never figure out why. And then I finally got to the point where I said, that's it, I'm done. And I chose from that moment on, and it was a choice, that whatever it took, I'm gonna keep my heart open and feel everything, because I was literally doing everything I could to avoid feeling the bad stuff. But when you do that, you're going to filter out everything else too. You just stop living life. You're just kind of going through the motions and then wondering why you're frustrated all the time. Now, this choice came 2 months before the diagnosis, which makes this very unusual.
If you could go back in time, and if there was a way for you to change how things turned out, would you remove cancer from your life altogether?
Yeah, if I could remove the cancer, I would. But I will tell you this. This is going to sound so strange. But I would not say the same thing about my impotence, because without that, I never, ever, nor would have my partner ever experienced what we experience now.
It just never. Get out of here, Michael. Really?
I'm serious. I am deadly serious. And I mean, if you want to explore that, I'd be happy to share that with you.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
What happens with prostate cancer is erectile dysfunction.
It's not a sure thing, but it's a likely outcome. And in my case, it's 100% impotence. And now, just to add.
So you could have all sorts of dirty thoughts in your mind.
Yep.
You just will not have an erection no matter what you do.
Yeah, I can be laying next to my partner, who is one of the most beautiful women I've ever laid eyes on and who excites me to no end, and I cannot get an erection. And that includes with the drugs.
That was my next question.
Yeah, yeah.
Viagra, Cialis, all those.
Oh, yeah. In fact, there's quite a funny story. Well, it wasn't funny at the time, but just to put a little bit of a backstory on this, part of my shutdown was the last 11 years of my 26-year marriage. We were effectively roommates. There was no intimacy at all. And nor did I go out on my wife. I stayed faithful to her. But at the same time, I threw myself into my work. She threw herself into the kids. And that's what happens a lot in baby boomer marriages, unfortunately. And it's part of our culture of disconnect. So I stayed faithful for, 11 years, the last 11 years of the marriage, to a sexless marriage. Then I end everything. That was part of the, putting that line in the sand I talked about earlier. And 2 months later, I'm diagnosed with prostate cancer. And shortly after that, I realize I'm fully impotent. And I'm going, you've got to be blankety blank kidding me. Really? After being faithful for 11 years.
Not putting it to use.
And not putting it to use. Now I can't get it up for anybody new. You have got, I literally shouted to the heavens. And I says, you've got to be kidding me. And so, I went through the four stages of loss, starting with disbelief, then a hell of a lot of anger. And then the third stage can either be negotiation or a depression. Unfortunately, for most men, it's depression. I chose negotiation, and that basically means you're trying to figure out a way around it. And well, it's so interesting. I met my partner, my life partner, who I'm with now, a year after all this happened. And I told her, and that's the other thing. Can you imagine, you haven't dated in 30 years, and now all of a sudden you have to reveal the fact of your condition and wondering if she's going to just suddenly look at her left wrist and say, oh my, this has been fun. But look at the time. I got to go. Yeah. See you later. Bye-bye. And I'm thinking, oh God. So I pointed down to my crotch. I said, sweetie, this isn't working and it may never work. Are you open to exploring other ways of being intimate? And at that point, not having a clue what that even meant, she said, being the woman that she is, she said, of course. And with that, we scheduled a very special romantic weekend at a hot springs resort. And I hadn't quite given up the notion of being able to perform for her like a normal man. So I brought the full contingent of erectile aids money could buy. I mean, the highest dose of Cialis you can get legally or illegally. I brought something called Muse that is so powerful that if a normally functioning man were foolish enough to try, they would be going to the hospital 4 hours later for relief, if you know what I mean. And then if all else failed, I brought the vacuum pump, which is, it's physics, so it has to work. And, but it's about the most unromantic thing you could possibly do in that kind of a situation. So I brought everything. And Rob, let me just say, it had been, by that time, it had been 12 years since I had been with a woman intimately speaking. My partner is Brazilian. She is drop dead gorgeous, very, very sexy. And I am on fire, but it just wouldn't show, no matter what drug we used. And then I tried the vacuum pump. And I'll abridge this one for you, but let's just say that in the height of my pumping frenzy, when I actually started seeing and feeling some results, I end up keeling over in excruciating pain, having sucked in my left testicle.
Wow.
Yeah. So at that moment, I'm thinking, I'm hunched over, I'm sitting on the bed, sweat is pouring down my entire head, my shoulders are hunched over, and I'm thinking, it's over. It's over before it even got started. And I mean, that still brings tears to my eyes. And I felt devastated. But then at the very lowest point, that's when something shifted. I finally surrendered to the acceptance of my condition and stopped fighting it. And that's the fourth stage of loss. I finally got to that point. And I looked at her and I said, "Sweetie, I'm done. I'm done with all of this. Let's just lay together and see what happens." Oh my God. And what happened with that is that we made love for 4 to 5 hours. And the only reason we went to sleep is because we knew we'd be trashed the next morning if we didn't. So we fell asleep in each other's arms. And by the way, and I'll explain why this happened, but her response was so far off the chart that neither of us had ever seen anything like it. And then next morning we made for love for hours and hours again. And that was 2.5 years ago, and it's only gotten better since. And I started thinking, why is this even happening? How is this even possible? Then I realized that because I wasn't able to get hard, I didn't have that overwhelming urge that comes over, you know, pretty much every guy. When we get hard, let's face it, there's this urge that happens that says, we got to use it. We got to use it now. And women, most women are not built that way. Most women are, you know, they take longer. Their sexual response, emotional and sexual response profile, it requires more time. And so because I didn't have that, I think of the impotence as short-circuiting this cultural and genetic wiring that's based primarily for procreation, but gets in the way of what our hearts truly yearn for, which is deep connection. It short-circuited that wiring and allowed me to slow way down for her and be open to being with her emotionally as well as physically in the way that she wanted. And she's unusual in the sense that she was actually willing to share with me what works for her. And where I think a lot of women are afraid to do that for their men, thinking that they're going to upset them. And if they only knew that most men really do want to know, right? Because of that slowdown, her response profile is, I have since promised her, I used to share the actual numbers on the air. I promised her I wouldn't do that anymore because she found it kind of embarrassing. But let's just put it this way. We have had very sexually active people who we did share this with literally tell us that is not humanly possible for anyone, much less somebody in your condition. And let me just reassure all the guys listening to this right now that, first of all, I want to acknowledge you for being able to do something I'll never be able to do again. And I also want to just reassure you that if you're open to it, if my partner and I can achieve this kind of experience, you most certainly can, and then some. Because you can do something I can't do. But it's a matter of really, well, let me put it this way. One of the things I learned, or she and I both learned, is there are so many insights to this, is that the word performance has no business in the bedroom whatsoever. And we replace it with presence, and both in the giving and the receiving. And it's one of the reasons we can literally make love for hours and not be exhausted. We actually have more energy after we're done than when we start. It's very generative instead of depletive, like a typical sexual experience. So it's a very, very different thing. And it never would have happened. We never would have discovered this if I hadn't lost my erectile function. So I'm not just saying that. I'm not saying it for effect. I mean this very sincerely. I'm doing a TEDx talk at the University of Nevada in Reno in January on this very topic. And it's first to start the conversation. See, impotence and erectile dysfunction is the biggest elephant in the room in our culture today. No one talks about it. And it's very similar to where breast cancer was 30 years ago. There's too much shame surrounding it. And as you can probably hear, I have zero shame around this. And So it's going to take someone to start that conversation. And I'm hoping my TEDx talk and these interviews will start that conversation. Because the other thing I've realized, Rob, is that the way a man defines who he is as a man is a choice. It can be based on the size and capability of our package, so to speak, as mm-hmm. our popular culture and pharmaceutical industry would have us believe, or it can be on how deeply we choose to connect with and please our partner in the way they want. Both of those are choices, and I'll leave it to your listeners to figure out which one is more empowering.
What's the secret?
Oh my gosh. Well, I think, there is no one secret, but it starts with learning to be really comfortable with being present in the present moment. And really for both parties, focus on being present, both in the giving and receiving. And with that comes this sense of adventure and exploration of, you listen to your intuition. We discovered that her left kneecap, when tickled a certain way, will drive her right through the roof. I mean, there's no manuals out there that say your left kneecap is the new G spot. I mean, it just happened to be for her. But that only came about because we are constantly exploring and we're both very authentic and willing to share with each other what works and what doesn't. It actually took me 4 months to rewire my brain. Now, remember, I don't have a prostate, so I can't ejaculate, in addition to not being able to get hard. So it's like a double whammy, right? Well, it took me 4 months to learn how to climax again. And climax, ejaculation, and erection are three different physiological functions. They are not necessary for each other, as a lot of people would have you believe. And what's so interesting is that, well, number one, I thought after 12 years, I'd be climbing the wall, seeing her get so excited and so on. But I felt so fulfilled in being able to provide that for her because I did it in a way that she said she would like. And I was very patient, very present. And that provided me more fulfillment than any orgasm I've ever had before. But at the same time, I still hadn't had any release in during this time. So eventually I learned how, and it was a matter of just kind of letting go, just not trying so hard. Oh, the headaches I used to get, not trying so hard. And then when they started happening, now I have no trouble climaxing at all. My God, like the drop of a hat. But this is what's really weird. They just keep going. I don't have an off switch like we normally do, right? After ejaculation, that's kind of it. And younger guys can do it several times. Yeah, but this just keeps going and going and going. It's an entirely different feeling. I like to tell people it's probably very similar to what a woman feels because it involves the entire pelvic region and literally like electricity going right up my femurs, up towards my, from my pelvis, up my femurs towards my kneecaps. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
So it's a different feeling than?
Totally different and far more.
Better.
Oh, yeah. So when people say, oh, I bet you wish you could. I said, look, if it meant losing what I have now, no way. Because what I have now far eclipses anything I've ever experienced before.
So you wouldn't trade that back?
No.
If you could?
No. Let me put it this way. I wouldn't mind getting hard again, but if it meant losing this way of feeling, then no, I wouldn't want it back.
That's a bold statement.
And it's true. And the thing is, I'm not the only one that says this. About 15% of couples who experience erectile dysfunction for whatever reason, and there's a lot of different reasons besides just prostate cancer, they experience far greater levels of intimacy than what they had prior to when things were working just fine. So it's an entirely different, and it's more than just an approach. It's a context. It's much more present for each other. And what's so interesting is that, again, this has thrown out so many insights. women suffer from performance anxiety too. And I don't think a lot of men realize that. Research has shown that 87% of women moan or vocalize during sex primarily to make their partner feel better about themselves and speed things along, which says a lot in and of itself. But the point is that they're not being authentic when they do that. It's a matter of them really letting their partner know what really works. And for most of them, it means slowing down quite a bit. And as women age beyond childbearing years, that becomes even more important. My partner is postmenopausal, and many women who are at that age range actually do not prefer intercourse at all. They prefer other forms of expressing intimacy. In fact, other research, and this is directly from, I forget what records, where they do studies on the population. Women who are 50 years of age or older living with a same-sex partner, 50% of them were previously married to a man. That ratio goes up to 75% for women 60 years of age or older. So what that seems to imply is that as women age beyond childbearing years, some are literally switching teams to find the kind of expression of intimacy that they're looking for. So is what I like to say is that, you know, there's that old saying that when a man and woman get married, the man is praying that his wife never changes, and the wife is hoping that he does, and they both end up disappointed. And that's a really good way of saying what happens with men and women as their long-term relationship progresses. Women, the way they seek out and express intimacy, both on the emotional and physical level, will change, absolutely, because especially as they go beyond childbearing years. Whereas men, I mean, hey, we did it the same way all the time. She seemed to enjoy it. What's the big deal? We just don't change. Why change a good thing? And so that's a lot of reason why so many marriages end up being effectively sexless after a while. And it's so unnecessary. That is so preventable. It requires real authentic communication on both parties. There's no one magic bullet here, but it starts with being authentic, present, being willing to feel everything, meaning having an open heart with each other and being vulnerable, and use that as the foundation for everything else. And once you have that very strong foundation of emotional connection or intimacy, and that's how I define intimacy, by the way, is connection, whether it's emotional, physical, or spiritual. Once you have that, that becomes a very strong foundation for all the other kinds of intimacy you can enjoy, because with that will come the necessary vulnerability and authentic communication that's required to experience what I call extraordinary intimacy, way beyond the ordinary, what most people experience. And this is fully available to everybody. We've pretty much come to the conclusion, this is my partner and I, that for most women, and we're talking about women who are comfortable with their own sexuality, there literally is no limit to their sexual or sensual response, none whatsoever. I mean, we haven't found the limits yet. And if I told you the numbers, you wouldn't believe me. I've been called a liar more than once on the radio. Yeah. So that's the main thing. And as I said, it's very important to be present. And women tend to be multitaskers. And so even during very intimate moments, if they're head someplace else, they're going to have a hard time really, you know, fully experiencing everything. And so it's interesting. This just happened, and it happens occasionally. My partner will sometimes, you know, find it difficult at first to climax. And she says, oh, you know, this is great, but I don't know if I'm gonna be able to climax. I said, I'll look up at her and I say, are you enjoying this? She says, oh my God, yes. I says, well, I'm not getting tired, and I'm absolutely enjoying doing this for you. So just don't even worry about it. Don't even try. Just enjoy it. Just lay back and enjoy it. Well, Rob, invariably, within 10 to 15 seconds, boom, once you give them permission to just not try, because the reason she's trying is because there's that old wiring that says, oh, I got to let him know that he's doing something really wild for me, something great for me. Let's say, don't even worry about that. Just enjoy it. And then bang. And then after the first one, well, it's, you know, it's like the dam released, and, you know, just, well, goes on and on. But It's women need to be given permission to not have to perform too. And it would be very helpful for women to give the same permission for the man.
A lot of it definitely makes a lot of sense. I can kind of relate to some of the things that you're saying. My wife and I had a baby about a year ago. He's a year and a half now, almost. And right after her giving birth, she's busy with the baby. We're not having sex early on in the first couple of months because you just can't.
It's hard. It's hard. There's a lot of reasons. I have two kids. There's a lot of reasons that happens. Yeah.
A ton of reasons. Well, first, you know, she's healing and she's not supposed to have sex for the first 30 days. And then she's nursing and you know, baby's up every 2 hours with the feeding and all that. But my take was always to, regardless of all that, to have a certain level of intimacy. It wasn't necessarily sex in the conventional way, but if she was laying in bed and she just put the baby back in his crib, you know, we'd lay there and caress her arm or her hair or just hold her hand. I felt the connection. Here we are together. We have this beautiful child. We're a family now. It changes completely how you view intimacy. So yes. I think that's kind of like what you were talking about.
Absolutely. And, it's 100%. And I want to acknowledge you for being an awesome, awesome husband and partner and father to, you know, for your child. That is exactly what I'm talking about. This is intimacy. If you redefine intimacy as connection that can happen on the emotional, physical, or even spiritual level, then that definitely brings in what you're talking about. And I can't even begin to tell you how much your wife, if she hasn't expressed it already, how much she appreciates that. Because so many women are afraid that if they show any affection to their man, that they're going to mistake that signal as, oh, he wants to have sex. I mean, he's going to think, I want to have sex. And that's not necessarily the case. And so the fact that you're willing to lay down with her and caress her and just be with her. A lot of times, Rob, that's all my partner and I do. And I leave it to her to guide where we go. I always let her be the driver on that. And the reason I never get frustrated is because I get so much out of that too. And when you're fully present and feel that connection, that is its own reward as much, if not more so, than the, you know, the powerful release that can come, you know, through an orgasmic response. That'll always be there. But the thing is if you let her kind of guide things, but show her that kind of intimacy. And one of the things we do prior to going too far with anything is, you know, first thing we'll do is we'll take a shower and I'll scrub her down with a loofah and then she'll scrub me down. Nothing overtly sexual. Then right after that, I'll massage. I'll give her a full body massage. Again, nothing overtly sexual. I want her to be relaxed. I want her to feel totally, you know, just in the present moment and feeling nurtured and taken care of. And she'll reciprocate, but I always go first for her. And so we might spend an hour doing those things before we even think about going beyond that, because the dive right in just doesn't work for her. Now, when she was younger and at childbearing years, you got those times when you got that look and pretty soon the clothes are being ripped off. And 10, 15 minutes later, if you're lucky, okay, that was fine. But we're talking about something here now that lasts, this kind of connection where you were talking about lasts for hours. Now, of course, one of the questions is who has hours for that? Well, you schedule it. That's what we do. We schedule it.
Hours, not so much anymore.
Yeah.
Especially with children. But that's kind of like what our little routine was. And then she would kind of acknowledge me back with caressing and a look and a smile. And then once we got into a little rhythm, once the baby got bigger and all that, then we went back to me rocking her world the way I used to before the baby.
Yeah.
But we still had that early connection so that when we do have a second child, then I know we can kind of go back to that till we get back into our normal cycle of things and that connection is there.
My partner and I are constantly talking about this because it is this kind of mutual discovery. And we look at it as if we're on this adventure together. And indeed we are, as you are with your wife. Every man listening to this is with their partner or partner-to-be. There's this adventure. And so part of the adventure is talking about it and just saying, you know, remember how we laid down right after the birth of, what's your son's name?
Robert.
Robert, of course. There you go. After Robert was born. You know how that was? How much you enjoy that? Well, tell me about it. What would you, okay, yeah, we get back to where things were before, but is there some things you'd like me to incorporate of that? And, you know, give her permission to really express what she would like to explore or consider. Women really, really like that. Many of them are afraid to express what they really feel because they're afraid they're going to hurt them, the feelings of their man, or he'll get angry or something. And it sounds like you have the kind of relationship where clearly that would not happen. But you might be surprised if you give her that kind of permission. And then by all means, do not react negatively to anything she says.
Oh, no.
Otherwise, she will never share with you again.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Have you written books on this subject?
Well, a book is in the process of being written, and they can learn more about that and some of my work by going to the book site, which is called Hardly Broken. H-A-R-D-L-Y, Broken, B-R-O-K-E-N. And the double or triple entendre of that name should be clear to most people. But the hardlybroken.com, they can learn more about the book and get some free tips from me. I send out these tips. That would be the best place to explore more about. And then I'm a regular weekly contributor to the Good Men Project. And I write at least one column a week, usually on intimacy or other men's issues on the Good Men Project. That's goodmenproject.com.
So it's hardlybroken.com and goodmenproject.com?
Yes.
Are you on Facebook or Twitter?
I'm not. I used to be Mr. Freaking Internet. No kidding. I am on Facebook. I really don't use Twitter, even though I have people following me and I'm supposedly following other people. I just never really got into the 140 character thing. I tend to be a little more abusive than that. But I am on Facebook and I'm also on LinkedIn and will be on YouTube as soon as that TEDx talk is going to be, because they plan on getting that out to a lot of people.
Michael, this was informative. This was a great conversation. Thank you so much for your time. And again, we encourage everyone to visit your website, hardlybroken.com, and also your weekly column at goodmenproject.com. Michael Russer, author, prostate cancer survivor, motivational speaker. This was inspiring, and I thank you so much for your time, Michael.
Thank you, and congratulations on the new addition to your family. And
thank you.
The approach that you're taking is right on, and your wife's a lucky gal.
I'm also very, very lucky to be able to find someone like that. Is
yes,
very lucky of me.
Very fortunate, and I'm sure quite deserving too.
Thank you. You're very kind. Once again, Michael Russer, and the website is hardlybroken.com. Michael, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rob.
Again, that was Michael J. Russer, and you can check out his website at www.hardlybroken.com. And if you'd like to get in touch with me, shoot me an email at robaguilarshow@gmail.com. If you have comments, suggestions, if there's topics that you'd like for us to cover, or if you have something to say and you want to come on the show, get in touch. Now, up next, we have Tripping Beats here on Radio Free Brooklyn, so you make sure you stick around for that. Next week, we're going to have female professional boxing champion Maureen Shea on the show. She is a friend of mine. We go back a while. I'm a big fan of boxing, and she is a great champion, inspirational story. So you make sure you tune in for that. Thank you very much for hanging out. I'll see you all in the promised land.
A menudo me recuerdas a alguien. Tu sonrisa la imagino sin miedo. Invadido por la ausencia, me devora la impaciencia. Me pregunto si algún día te veré. Ya sé todo de tu vida y sin embargo no conozco ni un detalle de ti. El teléfono es muy frío.
llamadas son muy pocas. Yo sí quiero conocerte y tú no a mí. Por favor, dame una cita. Vamos al parque. Entra en mi vida sin anunciarte. Abre las puertas, cierra los ojos. Vamos a vernos poquito a poco. Dame tus manos, siempre las mías. Como dos ciegos, Santa Lucía. La primera vez pensé, se ha equivocado. La segunda vez no supe de qué decir. Las demás me dabas miedo, tanto loco que andas suelto. Y ahora sé que no podría vivir sin ti. Por favor, dame una cita. Vamos al parque. Entra en mi vida sin anunciarte. Abre las puertas, cierra los ojos. Vamos a vernos poquito a poco. Dame tus manos, siempre las mías. Santa Lucía, Santa Lucía, Santa Lucía. A menudo me recuerdas a mí.
Alguien apriete el motor. cuando seas grande. Wow, wow.